Today I'm going to talk about the spin liquid state that I have briefly mentioned in my last talk. And I will talk about that state in more detail. So here is the outline. So I will first briefly recap what I said in my last talk. And in particular, I will make some comments on these so-called slave particle approaches to strongly correlated electron system, and in what context we should understand this kind of approaches. And then I will talk about a particular spin-liquid state where spin-spin correlation functions decays algebraically in space and time, and then we can understand them in terms of some underlying Fermi surface of some spin-carrying fermionic object, although the state itself describes insulating state. And then I will talk about the stability of that state, especially whether the deconfinement phase is stable or not against confinement. And then I will move on to the main topic of this talk, which is the low energy effective theory of this state. And then the bottom line is that this theory somehow is very close to string theory. And then I will give you some evidence for that. And then I will conclude. So here is the theory of almost everything in condensed matter system. So we have electrons hooking on some lattice. And then this is the Coulomb repulsion, and we can have chemical potential. And in addition to that, we can have many other next nearest neighbor hooking or next nearest neighbor Coulomb repulsion, etc. And this model can describe a variety of states in condensed matter system. For example, if Coulomb repulsion is small compared to this kinetic energy, or we are away from half filling, then numerically, we have a metallic state of Fermi surface. And if we are at half filling, and if we have one electron per side, and if Coulomb repulsion is very strong, then motion of electron is basically frozen, so only spin degree freedoms are left. And usually, in the deep insulating side, we have some kind of spin ordering, for example, anti-ferromagnetic ordering. And it is also very likely that the same model can have superconducting state in some parameter region. And then inside insulating state at half filling, near the meta-insulated transition, as Chenke mentioned yesterday, there are still some strong charge fluctuations, although they are gapped. Those charge fluctuations can may stabilize a spin liquid state where at zero temperature there is no long range spin ordering like this. And one way of understanding those spin liquid states, one particular spin liquid state, is to study the dynamics of spin in terms of some underlying slave particles. For example, we have seen this expression many times. So we can express spin in terms of some bilinear of some slave particle. In this case, this is a fermion, and this is my choice. And this what I call spinon does not carry any electromagnetic charge because this object does not know whether the spin came from electron or not, and it carries only spin. And then if at half filling we have one spinon per side, and if there is no particle hole symmetry, then these spinons generically form a Fermi surface. And then because of the gauge redundancy, this spinon has to be coupled with some kind of gauge field, and in this case there is a compact U1 gauge field that is coupled to this tri-dimeter spinon Fermi surface. So here are some comments. So just writing down a theory in terms of spin-on and gauge field does not automatically mean that those particles are low energy excitation. They arise as low energy excitation only when the gauge field is in the confinement phase. If it is in confinement phase, then this spin half object, spin on, is confined into spin one particle, and then gauge field is also gapped. So this, it is a dynamical issue whether we will have those particles or not at low energy. And the other comment is that because the gauge field has been introduced as some kind of constraint field at lattice, the bare gauge coupling is always infinite. Okay? So one may say that because gauge coupling is infinite at the microscopic scale, spinons are always confined into spin one object. Then how can we have the confinement at all? But still, the confinement is possible. For example, suppose we have point-like particle which does not carry any electric monopole charge, but carry only electric dipole charge. Okay? That's our fundamental particle. And then suppose there are some interactions between those particles which encourage those particles to form some kind of stringy object like that. Okay? And then actually one can view this string as electric monopole charges minus plus charge connected by some kind of electric flux line. And then when this tension of this electric flux line becomes very small, then we can separate this monopole charge as far as we want, and then those particles are deconfined. And what's important here is that we never break this microscopic particle into real two monopole charges. It's a many-body effect how this kind of deconfinement can arise. Therefore, even though we start from infinite gauge coupling, the confinement may arise depending on the dynamics of the system. So the other comment. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Shivaji has a beautiful picture where you can have the confinement, the confined magnetic monopole in some spin system, even though microscopically you always have some spin dipole. And another important point is that this kind of slave particle approach is not to derive a phase or to prove that one particular phase is realized in particular model. Rather than it gives us some framework to describe a new state of matter, okay? Some description rather than a derivation. And then the other thing is that the gauge rule and the statistics of slave particles are ambiguous. I could have chosen bosonic spinons, and I could have chosen different gauge group. And different choice corresponds to different state. And then which state is realized in particular model is a very complicated and difficult issue. So usual strategy that we take is usually motivated by some experiments, we find some locally stable saddle point in this approach, and then identify soft modes near the saddle point, and then write down some effective theory near the saddle point, and then compare the consequence of the low energy effective theory with some low energy properties measured from experiments, and hope. That's the usual strategy. Different choice of statistics. They describe different states. Yeah, they describe different states. And then, indeed, in the Hubbard model, if you apply this kind of Slay-Pytor approach, then one can find some parameter region where, at least locally, the saddle point where there is a spin-on-forming surface coupled with U1 gauge field is stable. But again, this saddle point may be just one local saddle point in very complicated landscape of the microscopic model. Of course, if we include all non-perturbative fluctuations, then it doesn't matter. The partition function should be the same, right? No matter which representation we use. But what we are trying to do is to find, include some locally soft modes. Then different choice lead to very different low energy behavior. So in this talk, instead of asking whether this particular spin-on-forming surface state is realized in particular material or model, I will try to address the following two questions. First is this a state, a stable phase of matter? And if it is, then what is the low energy effective field? So first I will address the first question. In particular, the first order question that one should ask is whether is this phase is stable against confinement. And we know that because the gauge theory is compact, gauge field is compact, since we start from our lattice model, so there is a instanton allowed in the microscopic model, which describes a tunneling from one vacuum with, say, zero flux to another vacuum with a 2 pi net flux. So the gauge flux is not conserved in the microscopic model, so we have to include this kind of process in the field theory. And then if instanton proliferates, which is always the case if there is no metal field in 2 plus 1 dimension, then it means there are a lot of strong non-perturbative fluctuations of magnetic flux. And strong magnetic fluctuation means that electric degrees of freedom should be confined because they are dual. So we have to make sure that those kind of instantons do not proliferate. So as a warm-up, let us first consider free fermions. Okay, let us pretend that these spinons are not interacting, and then ask whether the instanton is relevant or not in this free fermion fixed-point theory. And one way of looking at the low energy excitations near forming surface is to view them as some infinite set of 1 plus 1 dimensional chiral fermions, which are parameterized by the angle near the forming surface. Okay? This is just a view. And then that 1 plus 1 dimensional theory has this nice scaling variance. And then question is, what is the scaling dimension of instanton operator under this scale transformation? So depending on the scaling dimension, it can be relevant or irrelevant. Yeah, I can have seen, but one flavor is enough to show that instanton is irrelevant. In general, there are two flavors in physical systems, spin up and down. So starting from this theory, now let us go to the Fourier space. So associated with frequency, I can go to time, and then associated with this radial momentum, I can define a space. So this space-time is like a 1 plus 1 dimensional space on which these chiral fermions are living. Okay. And then they are parameterized by different angle theta. Then I can also introduce the Fourier transformation for that, and that's the angular momentum around the form surface. So I have 1 plus 1 dimensional fermions which have different angular momentum modes, and I have infinitely many of them. And then question is what instanton does to this fermion. So as I said, instanton is a source of 2 pi flux in space and time, so these fermions will see some flux created by this instanton. And it turns out that if there's an instanton at origin in space-time, for example, this fermion with angular momentum n see the flux as if this fermion lives in a 1 plus 1 dimensional space-time, which is orthogonal to this two-dimensional space. And this plane is shifted from the origin by some distance, which is proportional to the angular momentum. It makes sense because this fermion velocity is typically kf. And then if you measure the angular momentum from the origin, and if the plane is separated by n, for example, then angular momentum is proportional to n. Okay? You can explicitly show that this is the case. So as instantons move within this plane, suppose I transport it, as one fermion moves within this plane, for example, I transport one fermion around the origin of that plane at distance L, like that. And then this fermion enclose some flux created by instanton. Then in the limit where this distance L is very, very large compared to this distance from the origin, the instanton, the fermion includes just half of the 2-pi flux in the long distance limit. So here is a non-interacting fermion. Yeah, it's a non-interacting fermion. So I have. Yes. Yeah. That's the next. Yeah. We have to worry about that. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. So this is. Yeah. Yeah, actually, you don't need to have rotational symmetry. You can do more generally. You can just introduce some eigenmode around the form surface. Yeah, so I'm suppressing all fluctuations of non-compact component of gauge field. And then we have to include the fluctuations of gauge field. Right. What do you mean by all direction? Okay. Yeah. So I'm asking a very simple question. You have the background gauge field created by some static instanton, right? And you have this infinitely many 1 plus 1 dimensional fermion. And what is the flux that these fermions pick up when they move around the origin? So, for example, what more formally, how can we understand the instanton operator in terms of this 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory? And then my claim is that the instanton operator corresponds to the twist operator that twists the boundary condition of fermion from periodic boundary condition to antiperiodic boundary condition. Yeah, that's the point. So, yeah. So flux is a gauge invariant quantity. So you can choose some gauge to do that. For example, here I have chosen temporal gauge. No, so instanton is a fixed object, right? It's some create fixed flux background. And you just compute why is the flux that is picked up by this fermion. And then there is gauge independent quantity. You could have chosen different gauge. And you always get the same flux. Thank you. Yeah, so I'm working the limit where fugacity of instanton is very small, so instantons are sufficiently dilute. So of course you have a lot of instantons with high density, then we are not in the region where we can apply this kind of. Yeah, but my goal is to prove that if fugacity is initially small, then it will flow to zero. That's what I am trying to show here. Right, the angular momentum N mode near the Fermi surface.
So each of these, I thought that each of these fermions on different points in the Fermi surface have different momentum.
Yeah, so they are
combining fields with different momentum.
They are linear combination of them near the Fermi surface.
So what makes you unusual is that you're combining modes with different momentum. So that is very non-local
right.
Field. Why you are writing here something that looks very local.
Yeah, so that's like a little bit surprising, right? But you can really explicitly work out a background gauge field seen by this non-local fermion. And then you conclude that this is the case. So the claim is that in the long distance limit, instanton twist the boundary condition of fermions from periodic and antiperiodic boundary conditions. And we know that from the 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory, the scaling dimension of a twist operator is 1/8. And there are infinitely many of them in the infrared limit. Okay? This means the scaling dimension is infinite. More precisely, what's the action of instanton as I increase the system size? In the system size of L, roughly L angular momentum modes are twisted by instanton. Because if angular momentum is too large, then the plane is far from the origin. Therefore, at distance L, the day does not enclose enough flux. Okay, so roughly in scale L, L modes are twisted, and each fermion contributes action log L, because it's a 1 plus 1 D fermion. Sorry? Mm-hmm. There the density of state is zero. But you have infinitely many modes at different points. Yeah, that's the. I know it's a non-trivial statement, but it's true. I know it's hard to believe.
Related question. So you are here, but did you assume a relationship between Kf and the instanton fugacity, so that Kf has to be much bigger than instanton fugacity to a certain power?
Yeah.
If you go to very low Kf, then it will be the situation.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So there is some relationship between Kf and instanton fugacity. That is showing that if Kf is bigger than instanton fugacity to a certain power, then that is the truth. And what if Kf is smaller than instanton fugacity to a certain power, then what use is
it? I mean the other limit. But before it is become unstable against superconductivity, I was told that it's always in the confinement phase, at least at high density limit. Right, yeah. I mean, even in the zero temperature, if density is large enough, and if we ignore BCS instability, then what's the phase? It's a deconfined metallic phase of quarks. Yeah, I don't know. I was just told that that's the case in PCB. Yeah, please, yeah. Yeah, this is just okay, so may I? So let us turn on interactions between fermions. So let us turn on fluctuations of non-compact component of gauge field. Then this gauge field can transfer momentum from one fermion to another momentum point. Therefore, these 1+1-dimensional chiral fermions are no longer decoupled. So I cannot just add the scaling dimension as I did before. But one can still show that the deconfinement phase is always stable. In the following reason. The first thing to notice is that the theory is local in the angular direction in the low energy limit. So remember that if there's a Fermi surface in the low energy limit, this strip near the Fermi surface becomes very, very thin. Therefore, if I have a fermion whose velocity is along some direction theta, then momentum of the gauge field has to be almost tangential to the Fermi surface at that momentum point, which means that fermion whose velocity is along direction theta is coupled with only those gauge fields whose momentum is perpendicular to that momentum, which means that degrees of freedom whose momentum is along certain direction is essentially decoupled in the low energy limit from other degrees of freedom whose momentum is along other direction. So this is an emergent locality in the angular direction, which is absent at high energy. But as you go to low energy, theory becomes local in the angular space. This is one thing. The second thing is that the angular variable theta actually become deconfectified in the following sense. So as we go to low energy, the maximum momentum that this gauge field can transfer to fermion becomes smaller and smaller. In the recent picture, for example, we make this UV cutoff smaller and smaller at lower energy. However, the circumference of the Fermi surface do not change. They are given. Which means that compared to the maximum momentum that the gauge field can have, the circumference of Fermi surface become larger and larger in the low energy limit. Which means that they are irrelevant in the presence of singular interaction. Yeah, that's a good point. The microscopic model contains this non-local forward scattering, for example, in momentum space, but they are irrelevant. Not completely one-dimensional. I will show you in what sense it's not one-dimensional. So there's still coupling locally. They are not completely decoupled. But what I'm saying is the coupling is local in the direction of theta. I'm not saying they are decoupled, but. Yeah, I think the short range BCS instability is not here with the singular interaction. Right, yeah. Right. spin-on number is conserved. Because the spin-on density is same as electron density. There's one spin-on per site. Yeah, I'm not breaking you one. No, just one.
The
same.
Spin-on,
there's a total number of spin-on is conserved. That's the global U1. Spin-on has no electromagnetic charge, but number of spin-on is conserved. So that this phase is actually somewhere here. I'm here. So. Yeah, right. I think it's true in 3+1 dimensions, but. Because in 3+1D, the gauge coupling is also marginal at 3 level. So, yeah. Question is whether the fact that all 4 fermion interactions become irrelevant, is that true in any dimension or not? In higher dimensions. Yeah, so I think it's not true in higher dimensions. Because. No, it depends on dimension. So because it is two dimensions, the singular interaction generates a singular self energy for fermion, and that changes the scaling completely. And under that new scaling, the local 4 fermion interactions are irrelevant. The gauge interaction, the interaction between gauge field and the fermion. Okay, so where are so I think I explained the totality. And then, because the circumference of Fermi surface does not scale while the momentum, maximum momentum of gauge field is scaled down. From the point of view of gauge field feels more and more hopeless in changing the direction of Fermi at lower energy. Which means that the extension of the angular direction looks larger and larger at low energy. And precisely this means that the angular direction, angular variable theta acquires positive anomalous scaling dimension. Okay. So in the low energy theory, the infrared limit, the angular direction is extended from minus infinity to infinity rather than minus pi to pi. And then in this picture, the instanton operator, instanton becomes a pi vortex. So remember that instanton twists the boundary condition of all 1+1 dimensional chiral fermions. And there are one such fermion at each angle. Right? And in the infrared limit, all of them are twisted. Therefore, instanton is like a vortex with flux pi that goes through the direction of this angular direction. So if I write the theory in the space of this angular direction and this 1+1 dimensional space, then instanton is a vortex, pi vortex. And in this picture, actually one can think of a quantum state that is defined on the cylinder that encloses this vortex. Okay? It's like a state operator correspondence in conformal field theory. Here the operator is not point-like, but it's just a line object. So in this picture, the time evolution is along the radial direction from the center of the cylinder. Okay, and so for example, in the functional Schrödinger picture, you can define a wave function of the field on this cylinder, surface of cylinder, by fixing the boundary condition, and then do the functional integration as usual. And actually, in this picture, the scaling dimension of instanton corresponds to the energy of that state defined on the surface of cylinder with respect to the time evolution along the radial direction. And the point is that in the low energy limit, the extension of the angular direction is infinite, and the theory is local in that direction. Therefore, the energy of the vortex, energy of the state that is defined on this cylinder, should be infinite. This proves that the scaling dimension of instanton is infinite. And actually, this is true for any flavor, as far as it is non-zero. It's a very strong statement, but the emergent locality and the fact that the scaling dimension of angular variable becomes positive implies this. So here's a summary of the first part. So if you have forming surface, then even though you have only one flavor, instanton is highly suppressed. So the confined Coulomb phase can be stable, even in physical cases with n equals 2. OK, so let's have some question about this. But there can be there can be some instability channel in other channels. But as far as instantons are concerned, we can ignore it. So in 3 plus 1 dimension, the gauge coupling is marginal at T level. Even with a finite density, there's only log correction. Okay? It doesn't change the scaling behavior completely. Actually, it's marginally irrelevant. So in the infrared limit, it's just decoupled. Even with Fermi surface, there's only log singularity, and that means I haven't thought about that. So you said
that you have interaction and various other interactions, you might follow Markov with other relevant now.
Yeah.
Can you give us a simple explanation why?
Yeah, actually that's the... So with this singular gauge field, for example, if you compute one loop correction, then it generates this kind of singular self-energy. Then they become marginal in the low energy. They are dominant. Then you have to change your scaling to make them the marginal term.
I understand technically why I meant to physically why.
Yeah, so this is a physics. So we are looking at some infrared fixed point. At that point, this long-range interaction mediated by this gauge field is marginal in some sense. Therefore, any short-range interaction is irrelevant. Then you have some critical bordering mode, right? Yeah, then you have some, you need some, at critical point, you mean, right? Yeah, then you have some critical boson. Here, critical boson is a gauge field whose masslessness is protected by this gauge symmetry. Yeah, it's a Mesley's boson. Okay, so having said that, this deconfinement phase is stable, then question is what is the nature of this theory? Then I can ignore the instanton, then I can pretend the gauge field is non-compact. And this is essentially QED free with non-zero chemical potential. And then this theory arises in many different contexts. For example, it arises in this spin liquid state and some half-field lambda level inflectional quantum state. And similar theory has been considered in the context of a high temperature slip rate. So here I am simplifying the model. So I will focus on one region in the momentum space. For example, I shift my momentum, so I make one point on the Fermi surface to be my new k equals zero. Then I will focus on low energy mode near that patch. So this is okay because, in some sense, it's okay because the theory is local in the angular direction, in the low energy limit. So modes at different patches are not strongly coupled with each other, except for the one patch which is exactly on the opposite side of the Fermi surface. There, they are strongly coupled with each other. So I am ignoring that backscattering effect here as a simplification. Okay. And then other than that, this theory captures the universal physics of the full closed Fermi surface. So here I have a first time derivative term as usual for non-relativistic fermion, and I have this kx plus ky square dispersion. So there is a Fermi quadratic parabolic Fermi surface on which this kinetic energy is zero. And then I have this U1 gauge field, and I am keeping only the transverse part of the gauge field because in the presence of Fermi surface, the temporal component is gapped out. So you don't need to keep it in the low energy theory. So this is just some scalar-like transverse gauge field. And there's a coupling between, minimal coupling between this fermion and the gauge field. So this is, for example, one, it's a kind of non-Fermi liquid for a spinon. Okay, spinons form a Fermi surface and coupled with this gapless boson. And then this is a strongly coupled theory in 2+1 dimension. And then there is no dimensionless parameter other than the fermion flavor. So since it's hard, what we can do is to generalize n to n equal 2 into large n, and then ask what is the nature of the theory in the large n limit. And hopefully we can get some qualitative picture about the nature of the theory. And usually in relativistic field theories, if there are large number of flavors, then it makes theory weakly coupled, right? Essentially, n equal infinite limit becomes non-intersecting theory. But this is not true in the presence of Fermi surface. And that's the bottom line of this talk. Because there are so many soft modes near the Fermi surface, large n is not enough to completely tame the quantum fluctuations. So even at n equal infinite, there are some non-trivial field theory. My goal is to understand that theory. So let us begin by including one loop quantum correction. So this is the one loop quantum effective action. So if I include this one loop bubble diagram, this is the particle hole bubble, it generates some self energy for gauge boson, and it generates this kind of non-local damping term for the gauge field. And then this one loop self energy of fermion generates this also non-local self energy because we integrate gapless mode, okay, to compute this. And one thing is that this dynamically generated self energy become dominant at sufficiently low frequency and low momentum compared to this bare term. Okay? So at low energy, we have to change our scaling to make them to marginal, to be marginal. Okay? So the new scaling that makes these terms marginal is this scaling transformation, where the x momentum is twice faster, I mean, scaled twice faster than y momentum, which makes sense because Fermi surface is quadratic, yes? Kx, Kz, Ky square. That makes sense. And this moment, this frequency should be scaled three times faster than Ky, for example, due to this singular interaction, singular self-energy. And under this singular, under this new scale transformation, these terms within the black box become irrelevant. And as I said, the four formula interaction, short-range four formula interactions are irrelevant as well. Here I'm just looking at one loom quantum effect direction by integrating
I'm just looking at the law of
So this means that at sufficiently low energy, and if you are sufficiently close to the Fermi surface, for example, then you have more singular behavior than high energy behavior.
Yeah, simple. Yeah, I'm asking about the geometry of the Fermi surface, and you start by saying you see on the same way, focusing on the middle plane, Fermi surface. And I'm asking of the same degree with the fact that when you go to the IR, does it stay the same or is it like the stress power to the line?
No, I think it stays the same. So in this approach, Kf is like infinite. Okay? So that scale is very high energy. Then I'm only focusing on the mode near the Fermi surface. And then they stay there. Yes, yeah. Yeah, there is constitution. Yeah. Yeah, so the old Kx dependent term is irrelevant in the gauge field. No. What's surprising is that it doesn't lead to IR divergence. Right? Yeah, it turns out that it's okay. In 2 plus 1, this thing. I think this is because I am focusing on one momentum point and I'm scaling. I'm scaling with respect to that point. This is because this boson sees this anisotropic Fermi surface. Okay. So one point here, for example. Yeah. If you do. Okay. So what you have to remember is that this gauge field is not actually two scalar; it's a vector boson, right? So the at different transpolarization, you have different dynamics. So this I'm looking at the polarization which is perpendicular to this Fermi surface at this particular point. Then it can be an isotropic, right? So and then what's surprising here is that usually I would drop this all irrelevant term, right? In the field theory, if there are irrelevant term, I can just drop from the Bayer theory, then I will still usually restore the same low energy behavior. But this is not true here, because if I drop this frequency dependent term from the Bayer theory, then my theory becomes completely localized theory in time. And there's no propagating mode, right? Which means that I have to at least keep some minimal causal structure of the theory. We have to remind the theory that the theory has some propagating mode. So I have to keep least irrelevant time derivative term in the theory, which is this one. Okay. So the minimal local action that restore this quantum effective action, for example, in the one loop level is this theory. So the time derivative term and then x derivative term for gauge field is completely gone. They are all irrelevant, but I have to keep this irrelevant time derivative term for the formula. And because I have to keep this term, I have introduced a scale in the theory, because this is an irrelevant coupling. Okay, so there's some crossover scale below which the physics is governed some universal field theory, and above which this irrelevant coupling become important, and the theory becomes some non-universal. Probably other irrelevant coupling may be important as well. No. Yeah, so what I'm saying is that gauge field has its own dynamics, but dynamically generated part is more important than the bare dynamics. Yeah, so this dynamics will be generated from the fermion fluctuation. And that's more important at low energy. Then as far as I keep this term, it correctly generated this term. And then once I have this one, these are irrelevant at low energy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. At the bare, at high energy, yeah. But as you, yeah.
So,
they will be dynamically generated, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That theory is not local theory. So I mean, what is the local minimal theory? No. Yeah, yeah. So physically speaking, gauge field wants to propagate more as particle-hole pair rather than gauge field itself. Right? So gauge field propagate, but it decays into particle-hole pair. But that propagation is more important than the bare propagation. Okay? And gauge field is not different from particle-hole pair in the theory. They are all mixed with each other. I mean, in the sense that gauge field can decay into particle-hole pair, they are propagation of particle-hole pair contributes to the propagation of the gauge field. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so I'm interested in this low-energy region. So the limit that I will take is that I will fix my energy scale here, and then send this crossover scale to infinite, usually, as we do. And then we do that for fixed n. And then after take this low energy limit, then I will take the larger limit by looking at larger and larger n systematically. Okay? And this order of limit is important because for any finite n, this is the correct order of limit. N is the fermion flavor. Yeah, the fermion flavor, yes. Yeah. And then use this theory, and then let's look at higher order quantum correction. And then let's compute this two-loop vortex correction, for example. And then naively, so I have scaled my gauge couplings in this way to make a sensible larger limit. Then naively, I would have entropy minus 1/2 for every vortex, and I would have power of n for every fermion loop. Then naively, I would expect that they have same number of vortices and they have same number of fermion loops. They have 5 vertices and 1 fermion loop, so this is my naive expectation. But if you compute this diagram without any assumption for generic external momentum, but keep those fermions right on the Fermi surface, so this vortex is a vortex that connects one fermion on the Fermi surface to another fermion right on the Fermi surface. Okay? As far as those fermions are right on the Fermi surface, it turns out that this diagram is entropy minus 1/2. This one? Yeah, that's what I'm going to, yeah. That's the key point. Yeah, we have argued for why, and now he agrees that this is. Yeah, for special momentum. For example, yeah. But for generic momentum, it doesn't count. And the region of special momentum goes to zero in the large n limit. Yes, I think so, yeah. Yeah, right. So in the low energy limit, first you take, say, qy and omega q0 to a very small value, while keeping the ratio to some fixed value. Okay, and then both graphs give some number. It's not singular, they are finite. Both diagrams are finite. Then my claim is that this is larger than this by factor of n, the generic momentum and frequency. So, yeah, there's no... How this difference comes about? Yeah, so I will explain qualitatively how we can understand this difference. Yeah, so this theory turns out to be there is no infrared singularity. So it looks like this is the stable phase of matter. So there is no flow of coupling. Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah. About. So actually, no. I will not prove that. What I'm saying is that. At least we have the omega 2 to 2/3, okay? Yeah, and one loop. And then there is no singularity. I mean, there is no instability in the theory. I mean, the question is whether the theory is unstable or not. Is there any? Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know what happens at very large order, but yeah, and then it's not more singular, yeah. So. So at least what I can say is that order by order, it looks like the order of singularity is same. But we have infinitely many such terms with same singularity, momentum, space, which have same power of n. Yeah, that's the clue. So the reason why this naive counting in n space is because there's n dependence in the fermion propagator. So if you remember, this singular safe energy has been generated by this diagram. And then this is at least order of 1 over n, because it has two vertices, and every vertice is 1 over square root of n. And this diagram is more singular in frequency than this bare term. So in the low energy limit, I can drop this one. And then if fermion is right on the fermi surface, then this kinetic energy is gone. And there are many ways for the fermions to be on the fermi surface, because fermi surface is extended. And then whenever fermions are on the right on the fermi surface, the gauge propagator is enhanced to order of n instead of order of 1. Yeah. So this is exactly what I mean by saying that quantum fluctuations are enhanced due to the presence of infinitely many soft modes. More precisely, the question is, in how many ways I can have this internal particle Hall excitations to stay on the Fermi surface? Okay. The more quantitative way of counting that is to use double line representation. So suppose I require all my internal fermions right on the Fermi surface, then I want to know in how many ways I can impose that constraint. Okay. So with that constraint, fermions are right on the Fermi surface, and then there's only one dimensional parameter, say theta, the angle. Okay. Then I'm going to represent the fermion propagator using, say, single line, and single line represents some momentum on the Fermi surface. How about boson? So what boson does is to transfer some momentum to fermion and scatter the fermion to other momentum points. But in order for these fermions to stay right on the Fermi surface before and after scattering, then momentum of the boson should be written in this way, the momentum after the scattering of fermion and the momentum before the scattering of the fermion. Right? And then using this, I can draw the boson propagator using double line. So each single line represents momentum on the Fermi surface. So this double line, for example, means I have momentum k theta in this direction going in and k theta prime going out. Okay. Then if I draw this diagram using the double line representation, I get this. And then if I draw this, what I call non-planar diagram using this double line representation, and I get this. The difference here is that this diagram has one closed loop, which means that I can have all fermions remain on the right on the Fermi surface, no matter what this momentum inside the closed loop is. Okay. On the other hand, here there's no closed loop. All internal line is connected by external line. So n is the n copies of Fermi surface, right? N is the flavor of fermion, not the volume. So what I mean here is that here, in order for these internal fermions to stay on the Fermi surface, their momentum should be fixed uniquely by external momentum. So there's no extra ways for these internal fermions to maneuver right on the Fermi surface compared to this diagram. Okay? So more quantitatively, I introduce what I call a singular manifold. So suppose we have certain diagram. Here I have two loop diagram. Then I have, so L is the number of loops, here L equals 2. And then there are 2 times L internal momentum of spatial momentum, okay? Kx, Ky, and for each loop. So this is a 2L dimensional space of internal spatial momentum. And then I'm asking, what is the dimension of manifold on which all internal particle hole excitations remain right on the Fermi surface? And that manifold is some subspace in this space, and this is what I call singular manifold. And the point is that this planar diagram has one-dimensional singular manifold, while this non-planar diagram has zero-dimensional point-like singular manifold. And this is what makes difference. For example, if you compute the Feynman diagram and you have to do the integration over all your internal momentum, okay? Suppose I'm sitting on one point on the singular manifold, and there are, so m is the dimension of the singular manifold, okay? And then I have m direction parallel to the singular manifold. And the point is that the Green's function of fermion does not depend on those m momentum, because they stay on the Fermi surface no matter what momentum of these guys are. And I have 2L minus m momentum perpendicular to the singular manifold. And then Green's function depends on those momentum. Okay, so if I just look at this point and linearize momentum near this point, then I have this kind of expression. Suppose I have IF, internal gauge, internal fermion propagator, and then its propagator has only K dependence, not Q dependence. So suppose when K is zero, and if we ignore this frequency dependent self energy, then when K is zero, there's an infrared singularity with strength IF. But whenever I have integration over this perpendicular direction, that infrared singularity is reduced by one because of this phase space volume. Okay? But these guys cannot reduce that infrared singularity because the all fermions stay right on the Fermi surface no matter what these values are. So the conclusion is that if you do the integration, you have remaining singularity IF minus 2L minus N. And that infrared singularity is cut off by this 1 over N frequency dependent term. Therefore, the final result should be N to this power. Okay? So the correct power is not just the vortex and the fermion loop, but we have this correction. And in particular, we have this number N. N is the number of closed loop in the double line representation. M is just the independent ways these particle hole excitations remain right on the Fermi surface. So this diagram has M equal 1, and this diagram is M equal 0. This is what makes the difference between the two diagrams. And what's interesting is that for vacuum diagrams, you can have relation, you have some relation between fermion propagator and loop. Then you use those relations, and then this exactly becomes this one, where G is the genus of the 2D surface on which you draw your Feynman diagrams without any crossing. This means that in the large limit, all planar diagrams with genus zero are important. And there are infinitely many of them, even in the large limit. And one comment is that it's easy to show that the planar diagrams follow exactly this power without any further correction. But for non-planar diagrams, there can be some deviation. For example, there can be some accidental cancellation due to some even odd symmetry. And in principle, there can be some log-n correction. Okay? For example, if you keep doing this integration for non-planar diagrams, then there can be log-n correction. But the point is that non-planar diagrams never become as large as planar diagrams. And there are infinitely many planar diagrams in the larger limit.
And they're all equally important.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, for example, this vacuum diagram is entity zero, no matter how many vortices you have. Because these diagrams can be drawn on the surface of sphere, as John told us last week. And there, and starting from this kind of vacuum diagram, then cutting open some propagator and attaching vortex, you can generate infinitely many leading order boson self-energy and fermion self-energy and vortex correction. So there are infinitely many entity zero boson self-energy and entity minus one fermion self-energy, entity minus one half vortex correction. By the way, this is the same order as the Bayer vortex, and this is the same order that determines the leading frequency dependence of the fermion propagator. So So that means you have to include infinitely many diagrams to learn about the leading behavior in the larger limit. Which means that fermions are not in perturbative region even in the larger limit. So I think in the larger limit, yeah, we have effectively that. So non-planar diagrams, if you have handles, for example, then those diagrams are suppressed by 1 over n. So in some sense, some loop corrections are suppressed. For example, if you compute the correlation function between gauge invariant operators, then again, all planar diagrams are important. When external momentum of the, for example, if I compute three-point density correlation function, and if the external momentum is such that they connect 3 points on the Fermi surface, remember the relative position on the Fermi surface is a gauge invariant quantity. So this is a gauge invariant, then all planar diagrams give you the same, are all important. For generic momentum, they are suppressed. For example, if you deviate this point away from the surface, then they are suppressed. So there's some. Then it's real. Yeah, but in this theory, there's no mixing between different flavors. So spin on in each flavor is separately conserved.
The correlation function of psi I.
Psi j is zero. Psi I dagger and psi j is zero.
No. The spin, the SUN, you have SUN flavor symmetry.
Oh, then it's not zero, right?
Yeah, right.
When external momentums are in some special value, like this. So actually, this is very suggestive of matrix structure. Right? Yeah, as far as the, yeah. And actually, this is so strongly interacting theory. So, however, if you compute the boson self-energy diagrams more carefully, then actually it turns out that only one loop boson self-energy is non-zero, and all higher loop boson self-energy actually vanishes. And I think this is a special property of this chiral Fermi surface. In other words, the velocity of fermion along x direction is all positive. So although it's a strongly interacting theory, once two fermions interact with each other, then there's no chance for them to interact again in some sense. So actually that makes all higher loop boson self-energy to vanish. Which is not true for other vortex correction or fermion self-energy. So only that means the gauge coupling, beta function for gauge coupling is exact in the one loop. I think it may change, I don't know. at least for some for some diagram, it looks like it changes, but I have no conclusive result. So, and then one loop beta function is zero, so there is no divergence in the one loop diagram. It means that in the large and limit gauge coupling does not run. It suggests that this is a stable phase, at least in the large and limit. And then, as I said, this non-perturbative nature shows up in correlation function between gauge invariant operators. So here's the summary for the second part. So if you have Fermi surface coupled with the U1 gauge field in 2+1 dimension in the large limit where n is the fermion flavor, then this low dimensionality and infinitely many soft modes near the Fermi surface make the theory very non-trivial, even in the infinite n limit. Okay, and actually this is a genetic feature in 2+1 dimensional non-Fermi liquid state. There's nothing special about gauge field. And it is so we expect that some more weakly coupled description must be some kind of string theory or matrix model, maybe living in 1+1 dimensional space that Hong mentioned about a few days ago. But we don't know precisely what the nature of the theory is. Yeah, right. Yeah, so I don't know whether those logs are canceled between different diagrams or not, but at least there are some examples where there's a log arising. So gauge coupling is dimensionful near the Gaussian fixed point where you have this usual scaling, but dimension the gauge coupling is dimension. The bottom line is that there is no dimensionless coupling other than the flavor n. So there is no exactly marginal deformation like tooth coupling here. So actually the same planar diagram. Yeah, not fixed line. Yeah. So for same planar diagrams, if you have more vortices, then there's no parameter that control that expansion. It's order of one, which is to say roughly the tooth coupling is order of one. So this is my final slide. So maybe Hobart model is the parent model for very exotic state of matter. This is exactly why I say that finding new state of matter is as interesting as finding new theory of quantum gravity. I don't know whether I understand. So, you mean this loop or? Oh, this single line, they are determined by, say, external momentum. So the line that is, oh, okay, for example, this guy. Yeah, that is summed over. Yeah, right. Yeah, you have to integrate all of them in principle, yeah. Yeah, so if you do all integration of them, then you get final result that for each this kind of loop, you have extra power of n, for example. Right, yeah. So, so I can give you some flavor about what matrix may look like. So for example, if you integrate out fermions and then write some effective action for the gauge field alone, then you have this kind of three-point vortex for gauge field and four-point vortex for gauge field, etc. Okay. In general, this external momentum can be anything. However, this diagram is strongly enhanced when these three external momentum form some triangle right on the Fermi surface. So those are the important contributions. Then this index becomes some kind of one-dimensional index living on the Fermi surface. Okay, so I can effectively parameterize this momentum by some Q1 minus Q2, which connect two points on the Fermi surface, and this momentum to be Q2 minus Q, for example, Q3, which connect two points on the Fermi surface, etc. Then this becomes something like trace of some two-dimensional matrix, I mean the matrix, whose indices runs over the momentum on the Fermi surface. In advanced transfers, actually that's a good point. So this diagram is enhanced to this order that I mentioned only when this momentum is close to the Fermi surface, closer by 1 over n times some frequency scale. So there's some width, order of 1 over n. And that width effectively divide this Fermi surface into some kind of n weakly coupled section. So it's like n by n, it's infinite by infinite matrix, but you can view them as some kind of n by n matrix. So I think because of the fact that this kind of three-point vortex is enhanced when this momentum connects three points on the Fermi surface, you have some kind of permutation symmetry between mixing different points on the Fermi surface. But I'm not sure. Yeah, so momentum is conserved, right? You mean the symmetry of this? So certainly x and y is very different here because I'm looking at special point on the Fermi surface. So there's no rotation symmetry, for example. In the original model. Yes, of course, breaks down. Yeah, if there is a nesting, then if you have flat form surface, then there's no unique choice to decompose one gauge momentum into two momentum on the form surface. Right? You could have two. If you have a nesting, I think there will be no structural matrix anymore if you have then there can be many other instability, I think.
So you have a gauge theory, which is the one big symmetry, and the fermion propagator is not gauge theory. So why are we spending much time on the
Because to get some intuition to understand, for example, correlation function between physical operators.
But are you doing calculation in Coulomb gauge? What is?
So I have chosen temporal gauge, for example. Oh, Coulomb gauge, sorry, yeah, Coulomb gauge, yeah. But as far as gauge invariant quantities are concerned, they shouldn't matter.